Okay, we're all set. Now, I have this on a basic mute, and since tonight we're just on the telephone, I'm not going to put it into presentation mode, which means if you want to participate or ask a question, tonight you won't need to text me. You can just press *6 and you're off of mute. So let's have some fun tonight. This is your coaching session. Tonight we have the topic of self-esteem, and I am so excited about this topic tonight because I'm going to announce something to you that no one knows yet in the Augmandino community, and that is that I'm writing a new book. It's entitled Healing Self-Esteem, Being Real, Genuine, and Authentic. It's scheduled to come out in January of this next year, and I'm working on a deadline. I didn't sleep very much last night. Ramona can smile, because I'm getting some amazing downloads on this topic. And it's interesting when you're dealing with the topic how the power in the universe, I call God, has a tendency to put you in situations where you get to feel what needs to be written. Very interesting experience. Had one last night. Ramona and I were up at a neighbor's house. I mean up at, in the 25,000 square foot house overlooking the valley, and every inch decorated to the top. And it wasn't about the materialism. It was about the excellence. This family is incredible. This gentleman, that dear friend, is kind and generous and compassionate and everything I want to be. So, of course, when I pulled out of the driveway and I'm driving home, by the time I got home, I'd done a pretty thorough job of beating myself up. Anybody else ever do that? Just to be with me for a moment? And I sat in the kitchen, and I was just going, ah. And I turned to Ramona, and I said, I just got a great gift. I was just given a great gift. I just got back in touch with all of my own self-esteem issues. I felt them. And that's going to allow me to write about them more powerfully tonight. So I couldn't wait to get down here, and I wrote till 2 o'clock this morning, back up early this morning, writing again. It's just so exciting to be in this process on this topic, and it's our topic tonight. I'm going to share with you just a few pieces as we walk through this self-esteem topic. You've been coached through it. I want to just give you some languaging. This is how I start the book. As a young boy, and due to the events of my early childhood, I found solace in the privacy of my room. I felt safe there. For many years, I felt isolated, alone, a misfit, a stranger in a strange land. The world being what it was, the day came when I had to venture out. But it was out there where I had been wounded. The effort required to leave my house and go to school was exhausting. When faced with the prospect of having to connect with someone, I wanted to run home and hide. Close friends were few, and when a friend was finally made, it was again time to move across the country. I was tongue-tied, self-conscious, drowning in self-doubt, uncomfortable in my own skin. I don't know if anybody on the phone has ever felt that way. Almost everybody I assess has one or two measurements in self-esteem. They've got challenges, some many more. A lot of it has to do with what's happened in our childhood. A lot of it has to do with how we use our mind in terms of our vivid visualization, which we're going to be going into in a few moments. I shared both of the stories that I'm sharing in this book, in the first book, but both of them are absolutely self-esteem stories. The first was when I was a child at 6 and I had the dream of the treasure in my backyard. Those of you who read the book, you know what I'm saying. And I went out the backyard and dug down and found this box, and it was full of quarters, just like millions of quarters, just incredible. And that dream always brought me solace. Whenever I reflected, it was still vivid. I could still play it in my mind 53 years later. And we don't always remember our dreams, but I remember that one from childhood. And the symbolism, this treasure beyond my comprehension as a six-year-old in my own backyard. And you all know the Chicago dream, which we'll talk about more next week when we get into connection. I'm dragging the white sack behind me, and I'm asked to empty it and engrave the contents on my heart. Is anybody else suffering from a similar wound? And learning that my character has been forged in the furnace of adversity. Yours has. You know what pain feels like. You cannot change the past. However, you can choose to use these experiences as reference points, a rich resource to assist you in better understanding and connecting with and serving others. And we know, as we've been doing this, that when we choose to do this, there's finally purpose in all that suffering, there's joy in our journey, and there's much-needed healing in our souls. Well, those two dreams helped me understand that we have a treasure in our backyard, and the second dream taught me what the treasure was. It's our life experiences. It's our life experiences. I want you to reflect for a moment. If there's been any time in the last week that you've been playing through your mind any past mistakes, lapses in judgment, bad decisions, anything that might have happened to you that you did to another or another did to you, has anybody been playing out one of those situations or some of them, many of them? It is time for us to move forward. To move forward. Now, moving forward doesn't mean we leave behind those experiences. It also doesn't mean we go back and replay them, often in an attempt to change them, which cannot be done. So we can't go back to them. We bring them with us. We're going to move forward. We bring them with us. We engrave them on our heart, and we're going to use them as we move forward to better understand what someone else is experiencing. These are just experiences, no matter how awful they were. They're just experiences that have uniquely prepared us to serve. We begin to understand this, we begin to heal self-esteem. Well, I move from this chapter to the chapter on the four major contributors to self-esteem. I'd like to review these with you tonight so they're very clear in our minds. The first one is unmet expectations. So write number one, unmet expectations. I want to read to you what I wrote on this subject. It's just a few paragraphs. This deadly destroyer of self-esteem has its roots firmly planted in the gift of vivid visualization. Why? The two thought processes that determine the frequency, level of obsession, and the vividness with which we visualize are both over-focused 97% of the time in those seeking success. Sadly, over 98% use these over-focused and powerful, this over-focused thought process, this powerful gift, destructively. They go to a time in the future when all their troubles have been solved, skipping past all the work needed to create this outcome, and then spend productive hours playing out vivid scenarios about what it'll be like then. While engaged in fantasy, we can visualize an early evening flight to France on our private jet, 2 weeks in the Caribbean sunbathing and scuba diving. We can purchase and decorate our luxuriant oceanfront home in Malibu and buy a tropical island in the Pacific. We can pay off our parents' mortgage, buy new cars for our siblings, and donate millions to worthy causes. Or we can simply live a comfortable and easy life free from debt and stress. We can do this all in the 15 minutes it takes to shower. Each vivid scenario created mentally in a nanosecond. What are the chances that life will show up differently? What happens then? We can become frustrated, impatient, and even angry when life shows up differently. We can spend inordinate amounts of time worrying about how to make money. We can engage in frenetic, non-goal-directed activities, always busy, always exhausted, but never sure of what we have accomplished. We can become overwhelmed by everything that needs to be done to create our dreams. We can become desperate in our search for a bridge from here to there. We can begin to discount the value of what we're doing and long for greener pastures in an easier way. Unable to find answers to our question, why me? We turn inward and ask the insidious question, what's wrong with me? We can begin to focus on our lack, starting with a lack of worth and worthiness. This is the first measurement in self-esteem. It's called whole and complete. Take a look at your assessment, top right-hand side. What's the color on the first measurement? Are you questioning your lack of worth and worthiness? We begin to play out endless experiences from the past mistakes, lapses in judgment, bad decisions, trying to identify the reason for our current failure. We may begin to question if we are even capable of creating our dreams. That's the confident measurement. We may begin to question our core beliefs or believe we must, and that's valiant, the third measurement. We may believe that we must sacrifice or compromise these beliefs if we are to get what we want. This is the third measurement when it gets under-focused. Valiant. We can become resistant, resentful, defensive, and angry. That's the peaceful measurement. In the extreme, we may ask, does God not love me? I will never forget the morning in Sacramento when I hope you're okay if I share this with you. I'm so excited about this. You got kind of get a glimpse into the new book today. I will never forget the morning in Sacramento when I was sharing this deadly sequence, creating unrealistic expectations, experiencing frustration with when real life shows up differently, and the human tendency to turn inward looking for blame. Sharing this to a group of eager participants in a workshop. Suddenly, in the back of the room, on my right side, a young man began to enthusiastically wave his hand. A light had clearly turned on. I acknowledged him. He shared that he had good parents and a great childhood. There was no apparent reason why his self-esteem should be, quote-unquote, in the toilet, but it was. Quote, I finally get it, he exclaimed. He went on to share how he had been investing productive hours in the day, escaping into the future, and then vividly visualizing what it would be like then. Quote, I just wanted my dreams to be magically manifest. When that didn't happen, I thought something was wrong with me, and I beat myself up, end quote. For the first time, he connected the dots between his dreams and doing the work of creation. He finally realized that everything beyond the dream was contingent on first creating the dream. Nothing mattered if this was not first created. Most importantly, he discovered that there was nothing intrinsically wrong with him. He was simply using his gift of vivid visualization destructively in an attempt to avoid the work of creation. This is the number one cause. This is the number one cause of self-esteem challenges, unmet expectations. Now, I don't know if I'm going to go into more detail than this. I did in the first book, because these thought processes are systemic. We get really attached to them, absolutely attached to this thought process. And it's right, wrong, win, lose, life, death. And when it doesn't happen, it creates some really nasty chemical reactions in our body. And it is a natural negative tendency, a proclivity, we would call it, to turn inward and look for answers. Why are we? What's wrong with me? That's the natural tendency. Now we're going to go to one that I think is as prevalent. You know, it's really hard to say that one is like bigger than the other. They're kind of similar in a way. I may be waffling on my claim that one is the biggest. It's the most prevalent that we see. But this one's really insidious. This one is called the comparison game. The comparison game. Number two, comparison game. Now, you're going to want to reference these numbers in just a few moments. So one was unmet expectations. Two, the comparison game. It reads, here we stand holding our clay, our greatest gifts, greatest challenges, our current life and life circumstances. Where is our focus? Do we want to take what we've been given and create the most we can with it? Or do we want someone else's clay? Are we holding on to the past, paralyzed by current circumstances, wanting to go back to happier days in an attempt to reclaim the clay that has been lost? Do we want something we have never had and long to get, and our happiness is contingent on having it? Correcting typos while I'm reading. Do we embrace and honor and fully maximize our greatest gifts? Or do we minimize the value of these gifts, wanting something more or different? Have we become our stuff? And has the loss of stuff or lack of stuff left us feeling less than? Here we stand. Where are we focused? Is it on creation or comparison? In our media and image-driven society, it is easy to engage in the if-only comparison game. If only I had his or her hair, body, wardrobe, car, home, education, money, intelligence, career, children, companion, health, fame, or luck, and so on. As we compare what we have versus what we want, we may become jealous of others, covetous, and self-deprecating. We may begin to minimize or disvalue our skills, natural talents, education, or lack of our ability, and ask, what is missing? This is a distinction. If you ever find yourself saying, what's wrong with me? That's probably an expectation that's driving it. If you're playing with the thought, what is missing? You're probably in the comparison game. We may question the value of our tangible possessions, appearance, and accomplishments. We may begin to sacrifice our time, energy, and even our well-being in an attempt to prove our value. And the first one was confident. The next one is deliberate. In the extreme, well, this was hard to write, but I've heard this so many times I wanted to put it in here. In the extreme, we may begin to feel resigned and hopeless and start wondering what it might be like on this planet without us here. And there's the sentence. We may not consider or even plan suicide, but we would be okay if we got in an accident and died, or could drive into that pole or that wall, and our death was labeled an accident. When playing the comparison game, it is not uncommon for us to take 10 amazing people, select their best qualities, create one superhuman, and then beat ourselves up for not stacking up. Anybody ever done that before? I'm going to read that sentence one more time. When playing the comparison game, it is not uncommon for us to take 10 amazing people, sit in front of you, select their very best qualities, create one superhuman, and then beat ourselves up for not stacking up. In an attempt to compensate for our lack, we may overemphasize the value of our possessions, ideas, beliefs, and opinions. That would be valiant over-focused. We may even look for weaknesses in others and others' clay and attempt to feel better about our own. We may say, at least I'm not this or that, or at least I haven't done this or that. In the last paragraph, actually the last sentence or two, we talk about being independent and wanting to be our own person. Yet far too often we want to be someone else, somewhere else, doing something different. When we focus on another person's clay, wanting what they have, we will always feel less than. So everybody got that? Number one is what? Unmet expectations. Number two, the comparison game. Number three is traumatic events. And these are events that have occurred that have damaged or threatened the fragile underpinnings of trust. And I made a list here. I said it leaves us feeling fearful and cautious. We may even become reclusive. That's what I did. You might consider, if you're kind of reclusive, there's a possibility that something's happened along the way where you've kind of been a little injured. You didn't feel comfortable going out there. I wrote the most common examples of traumatic events include a lack of proper nurturing during developmental years, feelings of abandonment when parents separate or divorce, emotional, physical, or sexual abuse experienced as a child or as an adult, infidelity, emotional or physical, on the part of a companion or spouse, divorce or separation, unexpected or untimely job loss, and serious financial setbacks due to the fundamental behavior of another person or organization. Some survive these events seemingly unscathed, while others experience deep wounds that leave painful, debilitating scars. I'm sitting here with Rob Peters, one of our coaches from Chicago, and Rob is a therapist. I turn to Rob when I've got a therapeutic question, and I'm sure that if I turn to him right now, he would validate what I'm about to say. Some may need assistance from skilled therapists to navigate these potentially perilous waters and process through these traumas. There's nothing shameful about that. If you've got something that's in that sack that you can't even look at, go see a professional who can help process through and help you work through the trauma. And when you're ready to take that item and hold it in your hands and ask, is anyone else suffering from a similar wound? You're ready to put it in your heart. Move forward, bringing the experience with you for the purpose of serving another. Then it's time for a coach. But I shared something in here I'll just mention briefly tonight, because quite often when people have been through traumas, it's not unusual for them to be in specialties where they're serving people going through similar traumas. I produce a series on child abuse called Come In From the Storm. It's kind of fun. It's on 20,000 school districts in the United States, U.S., and Canada. The Virginia School District just licensed the digital rights for all their school districts, schools in the district, and some states have purchased a copy for every school. Here in Utah, every school's got a copy of the video, Come In From the Storm. It's 25 years old. Isn't that fun? I just had a passion. Part one, China Doll, is about emotional abuse. The diary is about physical abuse. The necklace is about sexual abuse. And I am posting these. I haven't done it yet, but when the book is published, they'll be posted on YouTube so that everybody can view them. So if somebody needs to see one, they can just pull it up on YouTube in a classroom and play it. And I'm hoping that it will serve. I wrote one of the great chains from traumatic events in all forms is low self-esteem. In truth, we cannot go back in time and change the past, although many of us have wanted to. However, we can absolutely change the future. Take courage, engrave these painful life experiences on your heart, and use them as reference points to serve others. This chain of low self-esteem can be unlocked and released. We can change history in one generation, and generations to come will one day honor our very courageous and unselfish gift. You know, whatever's happened to you, if you take that experience and bring it forward with you to help you better understand, it creates such a comprehensive capacity for empathy as it relates to that kind of a pain. Somebody else may be experiencing something similar. It doesn't need to be exact, but you'll know what it feels like. You'll feel it. You'll know the questions to ask. The connections can be rich and deep. So that's number three, traumatic events. Number four is inconsistencies. Now, inconsistencies occur when there is a wide gap between our secret life, our secret self, and our public self, our public image. Now, I've written down so there's no misunderstanding. Common examples could include addictions such as alcohol, drugs, eating disorders, and pornography. Other causes could include significant differences between professed religious beliefs and political positions versus current and secret behavior. Evidence of these inconsistencies could include serious health challenges, erratic behavior, violent anger, financial misconduct, infidelity, spousal or child abuse, anything a person would not want the world to know or discover. Unresolved behavior that is so terrible, terribly inconsistent with a person's public image. When these gaps are significant, we get really confused. We become what's called duplicitous, double-minded. Are we the secret self or are we the public self? Who am I? And the truth is, we discover we're not either. We're the observer of both. Now, if the truth be known, our true observer, the real person, the one looking at this, the real me, is probably closer to my public image, because that's when we're on our best behavior. That's when we're exercising the energy necessary to shut down our unhealthy habits of thinking. We may scream at a child, but we'll never scream at a client. Why? Because we are paying the price to overcome that unhealthy habit of thinking and choosing to think and act differently in the moment. That's a powerful piece to know. Because some of us have believed that our real self is when we let our hair down and relax and we come home. I'm turning and smiling at Ramona for a moment, because we all do this. We expend so much energy being on our best behavior that often we're exhausted by the time we get home. We stop fighting the unhealthy habits of thinking, and those who we love the most get our unhealthy habits of thinking. They're now in control. Our need to be right, our victimhood, whatever it might be, that's what shows up when we're at home. The challenge would be for us, we may not have a consistency worthy of this challenge of self-esteem, but isn't it a wonderful thing to know that when a person goes through the therapeutic process necessary to step back and own their true self, that their true self is more consistent with their public image. The other was just a secret that they weeded out of their life. It's a beautiful thing to see somebody go through this. Most of the time, these serious behaviors require professional intervention. Do you agree with that, Ram? Alcoholism, eating disorders. Yeah. And sometimes as loving parents or friends, we become far more enabling than we do helpful when someone is dealing with one of these processes. So we want to make sure we get someone into assistance. Well, here's the thing I want you to do tonight. It says, consider the four major causes for challenged self-esteem. Number one, unmet expectations. Two, the comparison game. Three, traumatic events. Four, inconsistencies. Write down on your notes which of the four causes may be true for you. Could it be one and three? Could it be two? Could it be four? Could it be all four? What is it for you? Just write it down. One, two, three, four. If we're struggling with unmet expectations and have been trapped in that destructive downward spiral of fantasy, and lost hope and self-blame, let's start committing tonight to use our thoughts constructively. We know when we shift that goal-oriented and pragmatic and honorable and analytically systemic thoughts, when we shift these and use them constructively to mentally rehearse, etc., we start to shift how we feel about our life and ultimately about ourselves. We receive inspired ideas and impressions. It's a beautiful thing to know. And when we receive those and we act on them and they turn out to be valid, we begin to trust the source. And that source, with a capital S, trusts us. And we are entrusted with ever-increasing levels of opportunity. I've said recently in speeches, let us listen to the whispers and then take these assignments seriously. These assignments seriously. If we've been playing the comparison game, remember we talked about this when we're doing Joy in the Journey? Let's choose to own our clay and begin creating the most we can with it. You know, of all the decisions we can make, that's probably the most important one. When we don't choose our clay, we find ourselves in natural resistance and resentment and rebellion. How can we set a goal about what we're going to create with our life if we're not owning the very clay with which we would create it? Everybody got that? This is the source of so many challenges and self-esteem challenges in the comparison game and otherwise. If we simply know and choose and create our own clay, we resolve a number of serious self-esteem challenges. If we're struggling from a traumatic event that has damaged the fragile underpinnings of trust, let us seek assistance from a qualified therapist to process through the pain. When you're ready to move forward, retain a coach. This is in the book. Obviously, you all have. If there are serious, unsolved inconsistencies in our life, let us have the courage to shine light in the darkness and root them out of our life, again, with professional help. Well, that's the challenge. Now let's talk about the objective. What is our objective? What is it we're trying to accomplish with self-esteem? Somebody asked me the other day, what's the definition? And I said, well, would you allow me to define it by its objective? They said, certainly. Client in Canada. And I said, the target at which we take aim, let's read this line to you, is to be, and put quotation marks around be, is to be real, genuine, and authentic, without the need to impress, pretend, feel shame or fear. The most difficult task in our mortal existence, and the highest level of maturity. I wrote this paragraph. I said, I'd always viewed maturity as an event that comes with age. Not so. Maturity is measured by our willingness to become aware of our unhealthy habits of thinking and change our behavior. When we do this, we show up being real, genuine, and authentic. Peaceful, calm, deliberate, clear. Focused on serving others. So we say if the objective is to be real, genuine, authentic, let's explore those words. We did when coaching, but just make some notes. Real comes from is the root word of the word relationship. To be real is to be able to create relationships. And we learned that when we studied intrinsic validation. So if being whole and complete and comfortable in our own skin is about being real, genuine, and authentic, being able to get outside of our own stuff, show up listening to a person, stepping into their world, taking down their walls of resistance, having their cooperation and productivity flood out to us and fill the very void in our soul, to bring joy, palpable joy in our journey, and this healing in our soul. This is the only way our soul heals. It doesn't heal by going inside, peeling away the layers of the onion. That's just a big dark hole. That practicing the art of connection, learning the principles of intrinsic validation, is one of the most important things we can do to heal self-esteem. Now think about this process. I take that which I've been dragging around and beating myself up over, and I bring it forward with me as an experience. Whew, I just took pressure off, didn't I? Now, I start to listen to someone, and I feel prompted to ask a question. And I do, and it turns out to be accurate. Gosh, I'm connected. Is that me? Wow, that was awesome. All of a sudden, we're starting to feel something unusual and beautiful happen in us. The walls come down. The cooperation floods out and starts to fill the void in our soul, and we find the real source of joy, service to others. Not from an empty cup. An empty cup occurs when we are a victim and we're giving with strings. That's what an empty cup means. I am depleted, and I want you to know I'm depleted, and I'm tired, and this is a huge sacrifice, and I want you to understand how difficult this is and how much effort I'm putting into it. That's giving with an empty cup. Truly listening, knowing that when the walls come down, we are the beneficiary of this flood of cooperation and productivity. That heals self-esteem. The next objective is to be genuine. Now, the word genuine comes from the root word genie, genus or genie, which is our genius. It's all about owning our natural gifts and genius and bringing these gifts to the creation process and the service of others. Now, this isn't about flaunting or bragging about our gifts. That would be an overcompensation. This is about fully bringing them to the service of another person. That's being genuine. Everybody get that feeling? To hold anything back in the service of another person is being disingenuous. We're robbing them and us of our greatest gifts. So that's being genuine. So we're creating relationships. We are acknowledging bringing all of our genius to the service of another. And the third is being authentic. Oh, I hope I communicate this well in the book. Being authentic, anthos hectic, being our true self. The embracing our intrinsic goodness. It may not be cool sometimes. You know, when you're a teenager, it's not cool to be good. But this is about maturity. And the mature person embraces their intrinsic goodness, free from resistance, resentment, and rebellion. We are self-directed, which means acting on our own moral authority, doing the right thing for the right reason because we want to, get to, and choose to. Doesn't mean we're going to do different things. Someone may go to church because they will be seen by their neighbors or judged if they don't or fear if they don't show up. Self-directed is, I want to go. I choose to go. I hope you don't mind me using that as a reference. Because I love God. I am acting on my own moral authority. Self-directed. I'm doing it because I want to. It's my choice. Keyword. It's my choice. The bulldozer of obligation and fear of consequences no longer pushes us around. We are the self-determined driver, focused, disciplined, passion and mission driven. Well, that's the objective. We think about the need to impress and pretend and feel ashamed and fear, all these overcompensating behaviors. Let's just take them one at a time. Now, I'm going to tell you the story I put in here. I said I had a funny experience a few years ago which I first hesitated to share, but then at the last moment, in the last draft of this book, I decided to include. May it serve. You remember the ridiculous story about my Rolex watch, which I told in my book, Today I Begin a New Life, and how I wore it like a watch model. Then there were the Mercedes, the Ferrari, the Porsches. When things turned around financially, I bought another sports car. It was Harrison Ford's jet black Acura NSX. It was fast and fun, like a road-hugging go-kart on steroids. And unlike the Ferrari, it was dependable. That is how I justified buying it. It was an everyday driver. I kept it for a few years and then sold it and bought a newer NSX. The second was a red T-top with a tan interior. This is a great car if anybody knows about an NSX. They're handmade. There's only 200 of them made a year. They don't make them anymore. They stopped in 2005. They got a new one coming out next year. Jay Leno's fighting over it, I hear. So one day while driving to the office with the top off, it hit me. You are becoming your stuff again. No, I exclaimed. Make it not so. Thanks to my love for real estate and some generous owner financing, we purchased two distressed commercial buildings in downtown Salt Lake. Now, these were homes, just so you know. This is like a high-rise. It's just two historic homes, which we renovated. Our office was in one, and we rented the second. In the back was a warehouse and an old, dilapidated single-car garage. I mean, this thing was ready to tip over. When I got to the office, I put the NSX in the garage and covered it. Quote, you will stay here until I am certain I'm not my stuff, end quote, I lovingly said as I left and locked the garage. And no, the car did not speak back, thankfully. This action may seem extreme, but retrospectively, it served me. The car hibernated in the garage for 9 months. During that time, I drove an older model Honda Civic with a crack in the windshield. One day, I decided it was time to move forward. I unlocked the garage, took the cover off the car, and climbed in. Of course, the battery was dead, but so was my unhealthy attachment. I jumped the battery, and off I went, back into life with renewed perspective. Now, I must tell you, I sold it shortly thereafter and grew up. So, you know. In a vain attempt to secure attention, admiration, or respect from others, or in an effort to feel better about ourselves, we may attempt to impress people by emphasizing the magnitude of our possessions, contributions, or the importance of our ideas and opinions. When our value is based on how well we perform, how much money we make, or the things we own, this tether fosters a deep, dense black hole that can never be filled and to which the light of love cannot penetrate, let alone survive. We don't need to be a self-denying ascetic to be wise. We need our lives in a garage for 9 months to figure this out. Owning nice things is great. We just don't want these things to be the basis of our self-worth. So consider, am I attached to anything? Is my identity tied to my house, car, career, accumulated wealth, etc.? If all of this were gone, what would be left of me? If I am attached, what would be different if I didn't need stuff to feel better about myself? If I was attached and I lost these things, can I let them go? What would be different if I chose to be real, genuine, authentic without the need to impress? This has been a big one for me over my lifetime. That feeling less than thing, you know? Things just don't do it, although they're nice. Then I talk about pretend. I tell a story about a seminar that Ramona and I went to. I mentioned this in the first book briefly. Ramona and I went to a seminar, 1992. And the speaker at this meeting had us walk around the room, stop and face each other. The person closest to you. So I'm stopping, and this man's standing in front of me. And he says, I want you to tell the person in front of you your deepest, darkest secret. And I thought, this guy is crazy. I am out of here. I mean, I came so close. And then I thought, well, I paid good money to be here. I might as well listen, you know? And so I turned to the guy in front of me. I said, why don't you go first? Well, this guy standing in front of me is about 5'11", 130 pounds, dripping wet, long, stringy blonde hair, and ashen, poxed complexion. Guess what he said? I'm a drug addict. My response was, yeah, okay, but what's your secret? that's like, boom, I got the message. Okay, I got it. Most of the time, I wrote, when we're pretending about who we are and we think we're fooling everyone, the only person we're fooling is ourselves. We seem to be the last to know what everyone else already knows. Isn't that interesting? This is often true of those secret behaviors like alcoholism and eating disorders, etc. Drug abuse. When we pretend with others, it can be dangerous. When we do this with ourselves, it can be deadly. Now, I mention in here that one of the challenges we have right now is everyone looks okay. Matter of fact, 92% of the time, with the people I'm coaching with that are seeking abundance, in the top left-hand side of their assessment, the measurement respectful, 92% of the time it's orange. We're over-focused on how people look. And if we look, doesn't everybody look okay? And everybody looks okay. Like, we're feeling like crap, and everybody looks okay. But if we were in their shoes looking at us, we look okay. Nothing is as it appears. And one of the challenges is not to wear our challenges on our shoulders. It's not about us telling everybody our woes. It's about shifting the focus from trying to look okay to being available. Everybody got that shift? See, when we're pretending we're okay, all of our energy is in trying to look a part instead of being available to see another person. We've talked about walls have never been so high but never so thin. The verbal hints that we're hearing now aren't nearly as subtle as they used to be. If we're listening, we'll hear them. Ooh, tell me more about that. I'm a good listener. Share with me what you're thinking. And we're deep into another person's world. Being real, asking questions that validate we understand where they are. We give them the gift of understanding. We don't have to tell them our woes. The fact that we know the questions to ask demonstrates we know. So let us not be a perpetrator of the lie. Again, we don't just stand up and say, I've done this, or here's my credit card balances, or my home's underwater. We don't need to do that. We just stop pretending and start becoming available. Everybody got that one? I'm just making a note on the script here. next one is shame. Now, Rob is sitting here. I remember years ago, Rob, when you taught this to me. We were talking about the difference between guilt and shame. You remember that conversation? And Rob was saying, you know, guilt is when someone feels bad about what they've done, and shame is when they feel bad about who they are. I mean, we've internalized the guilt, and it's very deadly. The word sham comes from the root word, or shame comes from the word sham, like a pillow sham, a covering, making a covering. When we are feeling shameful, we are covering our genius. We're covering our natural gifts and talents. That's why we, without the need to impress, pretend, feel shame, because shame is robbing us of being genuine. We've all made mistakes. I wrote, missed the mark, fallen short, and most of us are still dragging these experiences around in our sack. For some, the burden is nearly unbearable. Consider how often do we find ourselves reflecting on past mistakes and asking, how could I have ever done that? Or how can I ever be worthy? Or have I lost out? This is interesting. Because of what I've done? We all have painful items in our sack. It's time to cut the cord that binds us thinking about ourselves and release the shame and engrave these experiences on our hearts and then use them to better understand what another person is experiencing. It's time to ask a different question. In what ways have I been uniquely prepared to serve others? Last one is fear. Now, we've all heard the statement, fear is false evidence appearing real, unknown author. We understand this now because we watch the pattern of unmet expectation. And when life shows up differently, the body releases molecules autonomically. It's something we can't stop. Cortisol is released. That gut, that lightning bolt in our gut. Our intuition picks that up and says, something's wrong. So the false evidence is the cortisol, but it does appear real. It feels real. So our intuition acts on it. Our mind goes into a worst-case scenario. It only causes us to release more cortisol. We get into a deadly spiral. We're not talking about rattlesnakes. I tell the story when I was in Woodbine, Georgia, and went in the house to get a drink of water and came out, and there's a 5'2" timber rattler coiled on our driveway right by the stairs, started rattling. It was ready to strike. Our cat was playing with it. It was wild. Called Dad, and he killed the snake. And timber rattlers, over 3 inches in diameter, had 10 rattles and a button. Now, that's a different kind of fear. That's what cortisol and fear dendrites are designed for. Fear dendrites are released into the brain to shut down all the energy-rich parts of the brain, to isolate all the computing power and flee or fight. That's how people pick up cars, right? Rob's nodding, yeah, that's how it happens. Whew, this huge surge, because we're not thinking about other things. We are totally focused on that piece. Well, that's not the kind of fear we're talking about. We're talking about the fear that is artificially created when expectations are unmet. That's why it's so critical we use our mind constructively. 10 minutes spent in catastrophizing is going to result in 10 hours of impairment. It's like going to the bar and downing several bottles of whiskey, not bottles, but glasses of whiskey, and then driving drunk. You might have a blood alcohol level of 1.2. It'll go down over the 10 hours, but you're still impaired, and for the 10 hours, you shouldn't be driving. Well, we go into catastrophe for the next 10 hours. We probably shouldn't be trying to connect because our capacity to have empathy and practical judgment have been impaired. We're most likely going to say something we're going to regret and be in damage control when it finally does bleed off and we go, oh, no, did I do that? We feel all terrible about it again. So fear, false evidence appearing real, driven by visualization. This fantastical or catastrophic. It's just false evidence appearing real. It's so real, our intuition, and almost everybody on this phone has extremely high levels of intuition. That's the six measurements in the top left-hand side. Take a look at yours. That's how susceptible you are to your intuition reading those signals when those chemicals are released in your body. Well, how do we heal self-esteem? We're going to get started next week. The very first thing we do is we understand the principle of self-love. Now, we've had some airy-fairy definitions of this floating around for the last decade. I'm going to read this to you, this paragraph. Self-love is about having reverence for the infinite and intrinsic gift of life, starting with our own. It is about honoring and magnifying the gifts we have already been given, creating the most we can with our clay. It is about honoring our beliefs and embracing our intrinsic goodness. It is about being real, genuine, and authentic, free of doubt and fear, fully available to focus on and serve others. That's self-love. Now, in the material, in your intentional creation studio, there's a great piece on this. It's practice number one. Go to open up your studio, go to quality number six, go to the six ways of healing self-esteem. This is the first one. And listen to the piece on Know Thyself. This is taking our clay, this doing an inventory, not just of all the mistakes we've made, but all of our gifts. And two, choosing ourselves, choosing our clay. We've talked about that tonight. Once we've chosen it, then creating the most we can with that clay. And then four, giving ourselves from this overflowing. Dr. Harbin writes, this means forget all limitations. Be generous with your own self. Give your own self to your fellow man and to the world. Love your neighbor as yourself. Throw your bread on the water. You've heard me say this before. Abundance is not something that we win. It's not something that we seek to receive. It's a sacred process in which we actively participate and eventually become. And in the participation, we heal self-esteem. Practice two is connection with people. We're going to start this next week. Come next week prepared to take on intrinsic validation at a level that you have not yet done. To learn a new dialogue where you truly are listening with awareness. You're awake. You hear those subtle hints, and they prompt questions. You're awake. We miss stuff when we're unconscious. The very stuff that opens up the doors to opportunity. So we'll talk about connection with people. Then the third practice is mental creation, using our mind constructively. Because as I mentioned earlier, when we get that inspired idea and act on it, and it turns out to be inspired, we must matter. We trust and are trusted. We know and we're known. And one of the greatest healers of self-esteem is to be known. To be known. Practice number four is to be in action. Passion-driven action. My procrastination, which is born of fear, which has held me back, was born of fear. What we learn is that when we act, the flutters in our heart vanish. The lion of terror turns into an act of equanimity because we shut off the noise in our head and the real us shows up. Wow. That was so hard. Wow. Why did I wait so long? Even we're surprised when we meet our own genius. We want to learn how to be present in the now more often, spending more time with our natural genius. This is one of the most healing ways of doing self, of healing self-esteem. Doing the work. The work. Work gets a bad rap, but work is a healer, because when we're really fully engaged, we are engaged. We're spending time with us, nothing noise in our head. Practice five is stillness. When you go to quality number six and you click on it, it opens up. The last option is stillness. There's an exercise in there. I'm not going to read it to you tonight because you can go listen to it set to music. It's much better set to music. Just spend some time and just sit back in a quiet place tonight, maybe before you go to bed. Just listen to this. It's designed to help you get in touch with your real self and to step back from and become aware of your thought processes and just quiet them for a few moments. Put things in proper perspective. And last is affirmations. Now, in that learning center, there are the six affirmations for the six qualities of an intentional, for the six characteristics of self-esteem. Whole and complete, confident, valiant, peaceful, deliberate, and unconditional. And I've set those to music so you can listen to them. You download them to your MP3 player. I can envision people out on a walk listening to these six qualities. I am whole and complete. I enjoy being me, and I'm comfortable in my own skin. I recognize and embrace my irreplaceable value. I'm fully available to serve others. One more. I am confident. I own my clay. I embrace my uniqueness and natural genius and act free of hesitation, doubt, and fear. If you can feel these in your being, they should wake you up. Not the noise in your head. Step back from. This is you running, reflecting on your life and your thought processes. This is the real you. These are consistent with who you really are. And enjoy these affirmations. And those are the ways that we're going to suggest you heal self-esteem. This week we're going to study scroll number 4. I am nature's greatest miracle. Within me burns a flame which has been passed from generations uncounted, and its heat's a constant irritation to my soul. My spirit to be better than I am. And I will. I will fan this flame of dissatisfaction and proclaim my uniqueness to the world. Some of my favorite statements in the scrolls are in this particular scroll. I am not on this earth by chance. I'm here for a purpose, and that purpose is to grow into a mountain, not to shrink into a grain of sand. Henceforth, I'll apply all my efforts to become the highest mountain of all, and I'll strain my potential until it cries for mercy. This is so fun. Then there's a wonderful one in here about, I will concentrate my energy on the challenge of the moment. Be present in the now with me, and my actions will help me forget all else. We're going to keep our thoughts about our business at home and at business and home at home. We start thinking about home and the business, it clouds our thoughts. We start thinking about business at home, and it dampens our love. And I love this statement. I've been given eyes to see and a mind to think. And now I know a great secret of life, for I perceive at last that all my problems, discouragements, and heartaches are, in truth, opportunities in disguise. I'll no longer be fooled by the garments they wear. For my eyes are open. I'll look beyond the cloth, and I'll not be deceived. Got Halloween coming up. It's like looking at those little kids standing at the front porch, this ghoulish costume. But what we know is inside is this precious child. That we know. So enjoy this scroll. Let it into your soul this week. Let us take a look. What's causing our self-esteem challenges? And let us, as we go back through the process now, these six qualities of an intentional creator over the next few weeks, let us be doing so, looking for and addressing our self-esteem issues. We can take that seven-headed Medusa on now. Let's take it on. And know that the reward we receive is healing as we serve others. Healing as we use our mind constructively. Healing as we're present in the now. Let's go through this process together. It's been great to be with you tonight. Thank you. We'll be excited to be back to you next week with the video on the computer screen. And until then, have a blessed week, everyone.